I was like, Schoon, there's no carpet in that front room of that apartment.
Oh.
The apartment, the carpet has been removed from the front room.
So you could see enough through that sliver of
door.
Oh,
there, I could see the entire living room.
It wasn't a sliver. He held like an arm's length.
Yeah, I could see. I mean, he was standing in the doorway, but he couldn't obscure my view where I could see all the way in. And the carpet was gone. It was down the concrete.
Warning. The podcast you're about to listen to may contain graphic descriptions of violent assaults, murder, and adult language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Murder Police Podcast, The Murder of Goldie Massey, Part 2.
Is the first time that we went and interviewed him, and we were walking out the driveway. I looked at Chris and I'm like, that son of a bitch did it. And we'll get into it.
Yeah.
And you're going to know, but it was that feeling you get when you've talked to somebody and you're there and you see what you see and you talk to them and you're like, he did it, man. We just got to prove it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And another thing was just him, the suspect, man, this guy was, he was something. He's a talker. You know, Chris and I interviewed him the first time. I think it's like 3 hours long. I mean, he reminded me of some people that I've known over my life that just can talk about anything, right? You give them a topic, they can talk about it. And if you've done something, they've done something better. He was something. He
either sold Amway or cars in the past.
Yeah, probably.
I'm just saying.
And he was from Pike County. And I tell people all the time, this voice isn't made for radio, but I think what he found in this voice was a familiarity, with this country accent, because he was from Pike County. And he felt comfortable with me. And we played that tune. Because Chris with his New York accent, you know,
which I don't have any longer.
I would disagree.
I have an interpreter, something like a sign language interpreter that I'm going to bleed into this too, so people can understand. We'll put subtitles in.
There's an app for that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And just for the listeners, I think what's neat about you feeling that through intuition, I would argue that most of the time when we met people, and really didn't automatically put them in a box. Am I right or wrong?
That's correct.
Most of the time we stayed, it didn't speak to you. So I'm going to go along with you that if it spoke to you, it probably really
spoke
to you.
Yeah, and what's neat about that was it wasn't in a controlled environment. It was at his apartment, you know. And we talked to him and just those little subtle things. And we'll get into it and it'll make sense. But, I mean, we walked away and I told Chris, I'm like, this has got to be our guy.
Right.
And I was convinced.
Here's the yin and yang between age and someone that is new in the unit. And he wasn't relatively new, but I had been bit in trial before that I focused on one suspect.
Amen.
And I was not going to do that with this case. Steve was on the money and I wasn't going to fall for it. That's all I have to say about it. But yeah, we did well together on this.
Yeah. In trial, that's a typical defense thing too, is that we've all focused on the one person.
100%.
Even to the point where you'd have to testify about the eliminations you did to say that this is the only person, you know, if there was the only person left alive. But that's a common defense tactic, because we just focused on my person. Oh yeah, you know, because they had blood and cuts all over them. Yeah, that drew my attention. So good stuff.
Well, let's dive into it. So our victim was Goldie Massey. She was 50 years old. How did the call come out? Was it, you had mentioned missing person at one point. We know obviously she was murdered. So what did this call came out as, and which of you received it?
Schoon started the whole thing.
Yeah, thanks for that. He's blaming me. Can everyone hear this? Please witness.
That's what I said for years.
started it.
Hence my divorce. So during the time robbery homicide, we received missing persons. We did assaults. We did homicides. We did robberies. And this is just a typical, even though the cold case was being created at that time, I was still receiving other reports and assaults. So during that time, we were still receiving, I was still receiving missing person cases. And it came across my desk. On October 1st, a patrolman took a report for missing Goldie Massey. He got a call from her son, Zach Massey. He reported her missing on October 1st, but the last time he had seen her, originally, he said the 27th of September. We'll get into that kind of family dynamic in a little bit. So it takes some time once a missing persons report is written and collected. The process goes through reports, then it comes up to the sergeant, comes up to the lieutenant, and then it gets assigned a detective. It was assigned to me, and so I followed up on it and was reading the report, and I saw her son had reported her missing, and what's the typical detective 101 is to call the person that reported the individual missing. So I did that, and Zach was telling me the story that his mother was supposed to babysit for them. He and his girlfriend, they were not married at the time. He and his girlfriend had a child in common. She was supposed to babysit for them on the 21st the next day, and she didn't show. Well, he said he waited a few days, and I asked him, why did you wait a few days? He said, well, sometimes she just is late. And I said, no, can you get in a little deeper for me? I need to know her personality. I need to know her profile, really. And when I say profile, I mean her habits, people she hangs out with, to see if she is at a high risk of any kind of violent crime. So he explained to me that she's been in a little financial trouble with some, she's an accountant, she's been in financial trouble with some farmers. They're in Bourbon County, and that she had taken some money from them when she was doing their taxes. And she didn't want them to report her because she was trying to work restitution off personally to them. I said, okay. He said, so she may have left for that reason, but she would have told me, but I haven't heard from her. I said, well, I see that you said you haven't seen her since the 27th. That was kind of confusing. She didn't show up till the 21st. And he made the report on October 1st. So already my curiosity is up. I said, okay, who was she last seen with? And he explained to me that she has a boyfriend named Paris Charles, that he came and picked her up, and he had called Paris to find out where he last had seen his mother. And Paris explained to him, and we call him Paris, so it's kind of a habit for me to say Paris, but it's Paris Charles. And he explained to Zach that he picked his mother up in Cynthiana on the street. She was acting kind of strange, but then they drove to, I know this is a surprise to everyone in the room, Jim and Rose's bar on Georgetown Street.
Rose and Jim's bar.
Rose and Jim's, okay. I hang out there. I guess there's good fries.
If you
good
know
fries
Jim or, and Rose's, if yeah. you're a regular. Like.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, there, yeah. There, yeah. There. It's dark, cigarettes, pool. Yeah, that's all you got to know. So they had a few beers there, and then she decided she wanted to go to her old residence on Range Court. He said he drove her over there and dropped her off. That's what he told Zach.
Was she residing there? You said old residence.
Well, she had just been evicted from there.
So why do you want to go to your old residence if you don't reside there anymore?
Again, you're the detective. Exactly right. That's exactly what we were wondering. And that's exactly what we asked Zach. I said, why would she want to go back? He explained that the landlord had put her stuff out on the curb, and he didn't know if she had anything left on the curb. So that's Zach's only theory. So at that point, that's the only thing we had had at that time.
So Paris just drops her off and leaves her.
Yes.
Not knowing how she's going to get back to new residence or wherever.
Yeah. And I had that call with Zach on October 5th or sometime between October 5th and 7th. And then this is when it gets to me that maybe something's up and Steve's the next up on the homicide list. So I said, hey, Steve, I'm getting kind of curious about this missing persons report. I've been there for probably 18 years at this point. Well, maybe 15 years. And I said, Steve, why don't you go with me on this? Because it doesn't make sense. So Steve agreed. And on the 13th of October, so that's 13 days after we get the report, Steve and I go and knock on the door of Paris Charles at Chatsworth Court.
This is my aha moment.
Yes. And correct me, Steve will always correct me because my memory is a little old. I've probably, you know, me and a few of the NFL or the NBA basketball players have probably partied together at this point. No. So we go and knock on Charles' door. And at first, there was no answer. I remember this vividly, this part I remember. And there's no answer. We think he's probably working because it was late mid-morning.
Yeah, it was afternoon.
Yeah. And he comes to the door on about the third knock. I mean, we knock, space, knock, space. So there's probably 10, 20 seconds in between each section of knocking. And he opens the door. He's in jeans, no shirt, no shoes or socks.
Correct.
I remember that completely. And he only opens the door and he has his hand on the doorknob and you have a little space in there.
I think what's most interesting is he was standing in the doorway preventing us from coming in. Right. He did that intentionally.
Sure.
You know, I mean, he put himself in between us being able to enter his residence, and that was for a reason. But we could still see him.
So I asked him if he had a few minutes to talk with us. We're here about the missing persons report that Zachary had reported about Goldie Massey. And any other person would have said, sure, come on in. Well, he said, okay, what about it? And he left the door open, but he wouldn't let us step in. We kind of stepped up on the second step thinking he was going to invite us in, and he didn't. So we continued on the second step, and he continued in the doorway. And so we asked him normal questions. When did you last see her? And he explained to us the same thing he had told Zachary, except for he had added that when he got to Range Court, there was a white pickup truck in the driveway and a person that he didn't recognize or know that was a male white.
And I think, didn't he also tell Zach that he dropped her off to truck driver Greg?
Yes. He thought truck driver Greg was there.
Okay.
That he had dropped off to. Now, and understand this whole time, while Chris is basically doing all the talking, right? And I'm doing all of the looking.
Sure.
Just kind of like a 1-2 in an interview, right? That first chair is doing all the asking in an interview, but that second chair is just as important as that first in listening to what the questions are, but most importantly, listening to what the answers are to be able to come back with accompanying questions to those.
Right.
So we had a job when we were there, and that was Chris to ask questions. And when I knew that he was asking questions and had him distracted, then I could look, right? Because there was a reason he wasn't letting us in.
Yeah.
And we were trying to figure that out.
For the listeners, just so they understand, when the police usually come and talk to somebody, especially with something non-threatening like that, like a follow-up, yeah, most people invite the police into their home for privacy. So sure, that is odd. It's kind of, it's like they don't want their business talked about on the front porch. So a lot of times, and it's just hospitality too. So I'm with you.
And understanding we're in suits. We don't look like the police. You know, right. I mean, we're there just following up on a few things. We weren't.
And as any neighborhood, neighbors are looking out the window. They're coming and driving into their driveway. So out of politeness, the police, and I know the normal listener would say, no, they just want to get into the house. But that's not true. We just don't want them to have a reputation that, oh, the police were called again to our neighbors, right? That's not fair to anybody that lives right in the neighborhood.
But for us, when we make first contact and that person puts themselves in the doorway, there's a reason that they put themselves there.
Oh, 100%.
Right? Because they don't want you to come in.
Right.
And why don't they want you to come in?
What are they hiding?
Because there's something there.
So tell us who Greg is. You've talked about truck driver Greg. So you said he says he drops him off. He drops Goldie off.
I think what's important about the whole thing is it's sort of a picture that he's painting with a lot of different people that he had come in contact with Goldie. And those were just details that he could put together from different parts. Right. To give to Zach, right? To try to validate his story to Zach, to say, oh, I dropped him off. There was a white truck and it was Greg, but
these are just bits
and pieces that he's learning in his association with Goldie and the people that he knows.
He's
where
molding.
Zach probably knows the same people, and he's just trying to validate those.
He's molding several people into one to satisfy Zach's curiosity, and now he's trying to satisfy our curiosity. And we, of course, not knowing any of these people, we can't just say, oh, you're lying, right? That would be.
Yeah.
I mean, we're taking him for face value right. at this point. We have no reason to believe that he's done anything.
Right. He's
zero.
Just creating qualifiers and red sure. herrings is what he's doing. Yeah.
But he's giving good details. I mean, sure. he's actually giving vehicle descriptions and names. And, you know, it's not vague. It's not just I dropped her off on Range Court and I left.
Right.
I mean, he was expounding on the missing persons report that Chris had that he had told Zach. So he was going a little bit further, giving a little bit more details. And so to us, really, it was.
And he kind of insinuated, he didn't come out and say, he insinuated that, yeah, Zach, yeah, he and Goldie, Zach's got problems. He didn't come out and say what problem. Zach's got problems. I offered to loan him money. Mm-hmm. He actually said that while we were at the door. Okay, yeah.
Would it be surprised if the Goldie right. was on the run because she's in trouble?
Right.
So all great Plausible. Reasons when we start looking into Plausible. It, you know what I mean? It's
very helpful.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
helpful.
So as we thank him, we turn around and
we talk to him a little bit more because as we're talking to him, he has a knot on his arm.
Right. And yes, I asked him.
It was like raised. I mean, it was obvious. And because right. he wasn't wearing a shirt. And it was like a pump, like a little pump knot on his forearm.
We did ask him about that.
And it had it was lacerated also. And we're like, what happened to your arm? And he's like, oh, I got into a little scuffle with my girlfriend.
Girlfriend, yep.
And then he also had a spot on his leg. He raised his pant leg up where he also had like an abrasion on his leg. And he said he attributed that to getting into a scuffle with his girlfriend. We're like, okay.
Now, to the listeners, you're thinking, oh, this is an easy case. Not so quickly. Paris, some type of style of women like Paris. So you think girlfriend, it's not just Goldie. It's not just a certain person. So you have to look into his background, right? You can't just automatically assume, oh, he's talking about Goldie. So we can't do that right off. So that's a lot. And people think that it's very easy to determine these things, but it's a process. It takes a long time. It doesn't happen overnight, like on TV.
Yeah, listening, but I don't think you're anywhere near. I mean, you've got a feeling and everything, but it stops short of that.
Yeah.
Do we, before we get into any further on that too, just to maybe understand a little bit too, what do we know about Goldie? What from her family? What did you glean as to what anything about her personal life that you learned?
Right. And just to this point, and I've taken you in chronological order, just to this point, it's just what Zach told us about embezzlement, trying to work off restitution with the people she conducted taxes and CPA for.
Some cold checks, things of that nature, just sort of money issues.
She really didn't have a record to begin with, and then her record grew as we didn't locate her. So some of the people she owed money to started to press charges.
Well, and they started actually calling the police department because they heard that she was missing and saying, hey, she owed me money. What's going on with her kind of thing. And Chris talked to a few of those people. So we knew that there were some money issues there. And that gives a person a reason to not want to be around.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you're in trouble, you get away. So there were a lot of things going on in this case where there are a bunch of different scenarios why she's missing.
Right.
I mean, we absolutely didn't think that she was dead. Or someone had done anything to her. We thought there were plausible reasons that she would be gone.
Which is true with most missing persons.
Absolutely.
We had David Hester on here, and he did a very fantastic job talking about missing person investigations. And, you know, out in the world out there, people think that they're all suspicious and everybody's met an untimely death. And you know, be honest with you, probably we can all count on one hand of the thousands of missing persons between all of us that we've handled. How many of them were actually something met a nefarious end? It's important to remember that.
We used to joke about that in the unit of all the missing persons that would come across your desk. You know, the joke was you better look into that one.
Oh yeah,
because you never know. I mean, we took so many for granted. I mean, they were just missing because their family hadn't talked to them. But yes, there were good reasons, and you know, 98% of them. We're just missing people that didn't want to be.
It was that one
that would bite you in the ass.
You did diligently work.
Yes.
It's just at the end you would take a deep breath and go, now I can go back to something else.
You don't want to be the guy on national news, right?
Who just counts the missing person.
Yeah, Lexington Metro police detective lost four people that were reported missing by a serial killer. Right? You don't want to be that guy.
No, so you do, and I think that's the bane of the existence. And what the real work is that people don't understand, because I think we educate people on that, is how much you spin your wheels in mud.
Oh, gosh.
And, and it's raking leaves on a windy day. But you all said it best. That's part of the job. And again, if somebody goes in and gets that assignment, like if they worked as hard as you did to get there and they didn't like that, then you got to go, because it is. What I'm getting at is, though, is the reality of it is that when you do work all of those diligently and they terminate, you know, we've found women that did leave three kids that they right believe they loved and a husband.
Yeah.
And looked at you and said, I just like partying at Seventh and Upper. And
you have a right to do
that's
that.
That's it. Exactly.
You're an adult.
So, you know? Back to, I just wanted to clarify that is that
absolutely
there's that reality of what these things are, and then it's not TV and Hollywood again.
Well, I do want to ask, you said the knot on the arm, and he said girlfriend. Were both of you all thinking girlfriend? I thought she was the girlfriend. Did you say, so did Goldie do that?
No. We just let him talk.
We just let him talk. Like we said, he's a talker, right? So we just let him talk.
So when he says,
explain,
I got this and this on my leg, you just really go,
okay.
Oh, yeah. It's
interesting.
We're recording this. We're documenting this as far as documentation. We're going to do this. And so the conversation was not in front of anyone. It was when we got back to the car. Steve already had the aha moment, but I'm trying to get the answers from Paris to get where our next step is for our next lead. And when we get to the car, tell him what you told. And you already told him this is our guy. But why did you say that?
I was like, Schoon, there's no carpet in that front room of that apartment.
Oh.
The carpet has been removed from the front room.
So you could see enough through that sliver
of
door.
Oh, I could see the entire living room.
It wasn't a sliver. He held like an arm's length.
Yeah, I could see. I mean, he was standing in the doorway, but he couldn't obscure my view where I could see all the way in. And the carpet was gone. It was down the concrete.
Which, for the listeners that didn't take civics or take it seriously, that's a legal observation, because you're legally where you're supposed to be.
I was not in his apartment. I was outside of his apartment looking into
it. And when you're a place you're legally entitled to be, your field of vision, everything carries you. You should be a detective. That's a pretty good clue. Exactly.
Looking back, obviously hindsight's 2020, but in that moment, it was more of a, man, I can't believe that there's no carpet. I mean, we were kind of joking about it, but now, I mean, that was huge. You know, it was huge just to the fact of investigating further, knowing what we knew. Seeing what we saw, it all added up.
So where did you leave it with him? Just thank you for your time. We'll get back to you if we need something.
Yep. Right. Thank you very much.
Hey, you know there's more to the story, so go download the next episode like the true crime fan that you are.
The Murder Police Podcast is hosted by Wendy and David Lyons and was created to honor the lives of crime victims, so their names are never forgotten. It is produced, recorded, and edited by David Lyons. The Murder Police Podcast can be found on your favorite Apple or Android podcast platform, as well as at murderpolicepodcast.com, where you will find show notes, transcripts, information about our presenters, and a link to the official Murder Police Podcast merch store, where you can purchase a huge variety of Murder Police Podcast swag. We are also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, which is closed caption for those that are hearing impaired. Just search for the Murder Police Podcast and you will find us. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe for more and give us 5 stars and a written review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcasts. Make sure you set your player to automatically download new episodes so you get the new ones as soon as they drop. And please tell your friends.
Lock it down, Judy.